Hello there, everybody. Sean Collier here. I'm alone in my humble office, which is leaning slightly to the left as you come in the front door. It's a thing. I'm renting. I might not buy this property. I wouldn't buy this property because the office is leaning slightly to the left. The point is, I'm here alone. This week, we're just going to do a bit of a roundup. Just going to do a quick roundup of what's coming out here around me and I assume near you for the holiday weekend so that you can figure out what to see or what not to see with your Thanksgiving. I've got a couple of reviews for you, got some news, we're going to talk about things. We're going to, as promised last week, some brief thoughts on Louis C.K.'s film, although I'm already sick of talking about it, this week on You Can't Handle the Truth.
Hey, all right. Well, thanks for listening to You Can't Handle the Truth. The guys would love it if you would subscribe to them, give them a rating and a review. If you like the episode, please just share it. It's super easy. Your kids can show you how to do it. And you can catch me on Add It Up with Your Best Friend Addie, where I interview musicians, comics, just anybody who entertains me. And I tackle a different topic every episode. So come laugh at us as we laugh at ourselves.
It is You Can't Handle the Truth for, what are we going to do here? Wednesday. I think Wednesday. We'll look, either Wednesday, November 22nd, or Friday, November 24th, 2017. Happy Thanksgiving to you. Very sincerely, happy Thanksgiving. I hope your Thanksgiving was lovely, or will be lovely, depending on when you listen to this. Please keep in mind, I know Home for the Holidays, look, just watch Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. That's the Thanksgiving movie. If you're not watching that, I mean, what are you doing? Really. It's a weird movie week. There's a bunch of stuff expanding. There's a bunch of stuff coming out. And people go to the movies, but people more shop and eat and watch football. So, you know, rather than do an episode about one thing, I thought, here, I'll just talk to you. We'll make it a quick one, quick hits, and we'll be back with something else soon, you know, next week. Next Friday, we'll have something for you. I'm not sure what. The release schedules are so weird around this time of year that it's hard to know exactly what we're going to have for you next week, but it'll be great. Just assume and trust, and believe me, it'll be great. So you heard Friday, last Friday, talked about Justice League with Robin Hitchcock. Thanks to Robin for coming in. Justice League failed. Now, look, I know that to a lot of people, you hear Justice League made $96 million over the weekend. And you think, oh, wow, that's a great success. And look, no one weep for Warner Brothers. No one shed any tears for Zack Snyder. But what you really have to look at is not how much it made. It's how much it made against its competitors. Thor Ragnarok opened with $122.7 million. So a side movie, a side, whatever you want to call it, a single character movie for all intents and purposes in the Marvel Cinematic Universe bested the first ever big screen Justice League film. The first ever movie where Batman, Wonder Woman, Superman, The Flash, Aquaman, Cyborg was there too. Where the first time ever, all of those characters were on a team fighting together. That's the thing. It doesn't do nearly as well as the third Thor movie. That's a point to consider. happily and justly, righteously. Of course, it did not do better than the opening weekend of Wonder Woman. Came closer. Wonder Woman's opening weekend, $103.2 million. Guardians of the Galaxy 2, $146.5 million. The Justice League movie, with that star power, with those characters, couldn't come within 50, or came $50 million short of the second film featuring a group of characters that, until a couple of years ago, had no mainstream name recognition. If you want a comparison, if you want the best comparison outside of the superhero genre, I would point out that Beauty and the Beast opened to $174 million its opening weekend. I'm trying to find, you know, what the one-to-one comparison, what made about the same. You know, did it do better than whichever Pirates of the Caribbean came out this year? Yeah, did better than that. There you go. You beat the Pirates, guys. Not the Pittsburgh Pirates. They're easy to beat. Spider-Man Homecoming, $117 million opening weekend. Dunkirk, $50 million. Okay, well, you did a lot better than Dunkirk. But the point remains, It. Let's talk about It, an R-rated horror film. What do we hear for years? R-rated movies, they don't sell. It, $123 million. Pennywise, more marketable than Batman right now. And I harp on this point. Justice League, by the way, the lowest debut of any movie in the DC Extended Universe. Now, there's only four. There's five. Suicide Squad, Wonder Woman, Batman v Superman, and Man of Steel, all with bigger results than Justice League. What does this say? I keep saying it. Certain studios take it seriously. Marvel takes it seriously, and their Disney parents. Warner does not. It has to be good. It has to be. You make a good movie, and the people will show up. Don't make it bet. Make sure it's good before you release it. That's the point. And if the people, if the producers, the executives, the screenwriters, particularly the producers, this comes back to the producers. If the producers tell you that something's going to work and it doesn't, if your producers, I'm talking to Hollywood executives right now, are they listening? No. But hey, maybe one of you has their ear. I don't know. I don't know where you're listening. We got all these listeners in Tokyo. Hi, konnichiwa. But I don't know. I don't listen. This is to the higher ups, the studio executives. Will they hear it? No. But here's the point. If your producers say, yep, we got a good one here, it's going to make some money. And then the critics, that's me, hi, say, no, wasn't really that good. Fire those producers. Don't let them fail upward. It's if they don't know the difference between a good movie and a bad movie, I know it might make its money back. I know it might. Look, I'm sure Justice League will make its money back. Will it do that in its domestic run? No, but worldwide, it's already doing very well in the global markets. Great. You know, you're allowed to do well in the global markets and here. That's a thing that I think is lost. It's like, oh, well, we got to make sure it sells all over the world. Yeah, you can do that and make sure it sells here, too. That's, I don't even care that much. But when you, clearly, I just started screaming, I care. I just want the movies to be good, guys. That's all I'm saying about Justice League. Again, I wouldn't tell you not to go see it. It's you know, an above average movie, I think. Robin believed it was exactly average. Just right, landed right on average, right there. Here's what I want to talk to you about today, just a couple. We'll do this pretty quickly. Of course, the big national release for your Thanksgiving weekend is Coco. Coco, the latest film from Pixar. And Coco is one of those Pixar movies that you know, if you are doing a ranking of all of the Pixar movies, yes, it would fall towards the bottom of that list. But the bottom of that list, except for Cars 2, the bottom of that list is still so far above almost every other movie you can name. You know, Pixar movies, except for Cars 2, are pretty much always an 8, a 9, or a 10. And Coco is maybe an 8. And I'm sure some people like it more than me. Why is that? It's because this is one where the story cannot quite catch up to the visuals. I really recommend that you see Coco for how it looks. It is an amazing feat of computer animation. This is another one of those times, like with Toy Story, like with WALL-E, that you can feel they took a big leap forward in the skill in the art form of computer animation with this film, Coco. And it is, aside from being visually dazzling, it's very visually entertaining, too. There's lots of humor in the movement of this movie. There's lots of beauty in the way this movie is constructed and comes together. On the other hand, the story is not, this is not something like Up. This is not something like Finding Nemo or Finding Dory. It's fine. It bugged me a little bit. Basically, the plot is there's a young boy. His family are shoemakers, cobblers, I suppose you'd say, and they have a vendetta of sorts against music. His family hates music, but he wants to be a guitarist. He idolizes this late pop idol, and tries to enter a music competition on the Day of the Dead and steals his idol's guitar from this tomb, and that sends him into the land of the dead. And he has to, you know, there's a mission, there's a quest that he has to go through in the land of the dead to set everything right. It works. It hits all of the beats, you know, but it's just a very stock story. It feels like a story that could be outlined in the course of an afternoon. And we expect some degree of narrative complexity from Pixar films, except for Cars 2, that is not present in Coco. It's still a lovely message, and like I said, it's an absolutely beautiful movie. I would not discourage anybody from going to see it. In fact, I would say you should go to see it. But like I said, you know, it is not quite among the best Pixar movies. That's, you know, what do they say about pizza and sex and Pixar movies? When it's good, it's great. When it's bad, it's still pretty good. Pizza, sex, and Pixar movies, except for Cars 2. So that's Coco. I would give it an 8 out of 10. Two that I've seen that are expanding. They may already be out where you are. They may not be out yet when you are. But I think two solid tens. Yeah. I didn't even think about that until I started talking. In fact, listen, I'm going to tell you about three movies. Well, geez, this is a tricky one. I'm going to tell you about two movies that I am giving the 10 rating. No, they're all 10s. They're all 10s, guys. I don't want to be stingy with them. I don't, you know, you want to end up with just a handful of 10s over the course of the year. But I think all three of these movies get them. These are three of the best films of the year. There, how about that? Let's go in alphabetical order, shall we? Okay. And I keep reversing words in this title. Does that give it away? No, it's not what you think it is. I'm going to talk about what you think it is after this one. Last Flag Flying by Richard Linklater. Starring Bryan Cranston, Lawrence Fishburne, Steve Carell are the trio at the core of this film. Critical reception has been mixed. I was floored by this movie. Absolutely gobsmacked, as it were, by Last Flag flying. This is a movie about, you know, I'll give you just the barest outline. Steve Carell reconnects. It's set about 2002, 2003. He reconnects with two of his old buddies from Vietnam. He was in the war with Bryan Cranston and Lawrence Fishburne. He has not seen them in decades. He tracks them down. When he gets them all in the same place, he reveals that he has brought them together because his son has died in the early days of the war in Iraq, and he needs their help and support to go through the process of burying his son. And it's heartbreaking. It's also often very funny. From off of the performances, but it's fundamentally a very thoughtful drama that has a lot to say about the nature of and the meaning of patriotism in the 21st century, and not in the way that we often see things called patriotism. I don't want to prejudice you any more than saying that, but that's you know, it's a movie that made me think a lot. It's a movie that'll make you think a lot. Those performances are great. Steve Carell with the best performance of his career, bar none. So I highly recommend Last Flag Flying, as directed by Richard Linklater. That's a 10. Next in alphabetical order is Mudbound. And here's why I especially want to talk to you about Mudbound. I understand if the weekend after Thanksgiving, you don't like to put on pants or shoes. I support that. No, I do not, unless you go buy cosmetics from my girlfriend, Mary Beth Coolin, at Macy's. Go do those. Go do that on Black Friday. Other than that, I don't support Black Friday shopping because the thing about it is I think that a holiday weekend should be spent at home and not, you know, not punching somebody so that you could get Alexa in your house for like $18 less than Alexa would have been the day before. You know what I mean? The Amazon what's it? All right, I'm not going to go on that rant. But here's the point. I especially think you should stay home on Friday. And what you need is a movie. And Mudbound is in a very limited theatrical release right now. It is also streaming on Netflix right now. It is a Netflix film with their movies that they have awards hopes for. They do a theatrical and streaming simultaneous release. Go see it in the theater if you feel like it, but if you have Netflix, put it on. I don't want to tell you anything about this movie beforehand. It takes place in the South in the days immediately after the or during and after World War II. Let's say that. Takes place in the South during and after World War II. It's about two families. I don't want to tell you any more than that because I knew very little going into it, and wow. Powerful, perfectly directed, great performances, beautifully shot. This is, you know, if the playoffs started today, if I had to send in a ballot today, Mudbound would be my choice in a lot of categories. Frankly, and I haven't seen everything yet, you know that. Frankly, Mudbound is probably my number one right now as we talk. I reserve the right to change my mind on that 18 times. But the point is, this is a perfect movie, and it's on Netflix right now. You have no excuse. Watch it this weekend. The third movie that I'm also giving a 10 to, and I thought about, I went back and forth on this one. In the end, I'm like, no, you know, I think it gets there, is Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, starring Frances McDormand, Sam Rockwell, Woody Harrelson, Peter Dinklage. Great cast, great film. This is by Martin McDonagh. He's done two movies, In Bruges and Seven Psychopaths. Both of those movies are great, but have problems. Martin McDonagh is, you know, for most of his career, was a playwright. A lot of his plays have no problems. A lot of his plays are perfect. His films did not quite yet live, or his first two films did not live up to the standard of his scripts, his plays. Three Billboards absolutely does. Just watch the trailer wherever you can find it. It's about a woman who's angry about the police in her small town not doing enough to investigate the death of her daughter. It is a dark comedy in that I laughed my ass off a number of times. But the thing that Martin McDonagh is better at than anybody else is having moments of uproarious comedy and moments of tragedy that just floor you naturally in the same project, in the same film or play, in a way that does not feel exploitative, in a way that does not feel cheap. He earns it. You gotta see this. You gotta see Three Billboards. Yes, it is very dark. It is very adult. Other than that, you have to see all three of these movies. I really want you to see Last Flag Flying, Mudbound, and Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. They all get a 10. Every one of them. Now I'm up to four. Those three and The Florida Project are the only films to have received the perfect rating from me thus far in 2017. But many good ones yet to see, I'm sure. Okay, I'm going to leave you with this. And again, we'll be back next week. I have not confirmed what we'll be talking about next week. Following that, the week after, a week from, or rather 2 weeks from this Friday, we are going to talk about The Disaster Artist. Yeah, that's right. The Disaster Artist, the film about the making of The Room. Oh, hi, Mark. We're going to talk about it with me and Addie Twigg. Addie Twigg and I will have a conversation about The Disaster Artist in 2 weeks. If you haven't seen The Room, now is the time to see The Room. You got a couple of weeks before The Disaster Artist comes out. If you don't know about The Room, it's a terrible movie that you cannot look away from. The quote, and I'm gonna miss the guy's name, the guy who co-wrote the book The Disaster Artist, not Greg Sestero, who was in the film, the other guy, I'm sorry, I'm forgetting his name. The book is great too, read the book. The quote about The Room is, "The Room is like a movie made by an alien who has never seen a movie but has had movies thoroughly explained to him." That's The Room. And The Disaster Artist is the movie about that movie. Talking about it with Addie in 2 weeks. If you heard last week's episode with the great Robin Hitchcock, Pittsburgh's best film mind is inside the head of Robin Hitchcock. I talked a little bit about how I had received a copy of the Louis C.K. film I Love You, Daddy, and I just, you know, I throw up in the back of my throat a little bit whenever I say the name of it. And that I was going to watch it, and I was going to review it. I've written that review. It's at facebook.com/SeanCollierPGH. You can read the 400-word version there if you like. What I want to stress is there's no need to see this movie. It's exactly what you think it is. It is a powerful, middle-aged white guy playing a powerful, middle-aged white guy wrestling with, to put it bluntly, wrestling with the understanding that women are human beings, and failing to come to terms with that. I think that the character might think he has come to terms with that. I think that Louis might think that the character thinks that he has come to terms with that. But fundamentally, it's a guy that can't stand that he doesn't have control over the women around him. He knows he doesn't understand the women around him, primarily his daughter, also a woman he's dating, also these other women in his life. He knows he doesn't understand them, and that makes him mad, and he doesn't get that he is threatened by autonomy in women. And look, yeah, I'm seeing this in the light of everything we now know about Louis. And yes, what we now know about Louis has three dozen horrifying, creepy echoes in this movie that make it completely impossible to watch. But beyond that, even if that hadn't happened, even if we didn't know that, that's what this movie would be about. This is not a funny, this is not an episode of Louie shot like a Woody Allen film. That's not, I think a lot of people want, you know, before we heard all this, what a lot of people wanted from this movie was that, to have that brand of humor shot and presented in the style of an old Woody Allen movie. It's not that. It's not that funny. And it's not not funny because of what we know about Louie. It's just simply not a big comedy. It's this weird meditation on, you know, feeble sexuality. And it's a bad movie by any standard. It's not a good movie. It's not something you need to see. You may never ever have the chance. It doesn't look like it's ever going to be formally released. I'm sure eventually it'll leak somewhere. Do not feel any curiosity. This isn't like, you know, everyone got in my face when I was like, Mother is great. I don't think anybody should see it. Everyone was like, well, that just makes me want to see it more. This isn't one of those times. This is, yeah, I've seen it. There's nothing to see here. There's nothing to see here. There's no Schadenfreude pleasure you can take even from watching this and see, this is how he went down, you know? See, because this guy, it's just nothing. It's just a guy working out his shit on screen. That's all it is. And it's not worth your time. I wanted to watch it because, pretentiously, maybe I consider myself a film critic. That's not pretentious. And I felt, well, you know what? It's kind of my job to watch certain things so other people don't have to. And never has there been more of a clear case when that was called for than this. So I watched it. It happened. I'm here to tell you, there's nothing to this one. And in the light of what we now know, it's frequently terrifying. Man, somebody should put a poster together with all the quotes from reviews of I Love You, Daddy by people who only saw it afterwards. That'd be a good time. Hey, I said I don't want you to go out on Friday, because stay in and watch Mudbound. I do want you to go out on Saturday. You know why? Because myself and Gene Collier, he's my father, are doing a Collier and Collier show at Arcade Comedy Theater downtown. That's right, Saturday night, November 25th, Collier and Collier returns to Arcade Comedy Theater, the new arcade at 943 Liberty Avenue. And you can head down there, see both of us. Suzanne Lawrence will be hosting the show for us. Always happy to perform with Suzanne. It's a great time. If you haven't seen the new arcade yet, we would love to have you go to arcadecomedytheater.com. Get your tickets now. They're already moving. I hope we sell it out. I don't know if we're going to sell it out or not. It's always tricky with a holiday weekend, but they are going. There is a chance that we're going to fill that room up, so don't get locked out from your dual Collier holiday experience. I'm just floored by that phrase. Yeah, get your tickets now at arcadecomedytheater.com. Now I'm going to go get t-shirts printed that say Dual Collier Holiday Experience. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.